Let's just take a moment to take a deep breath and close our eyes. Let's hold this moment in gratitude to the Holy Spirit for bringing us together as we continue our search for truth and miracles. We affirm the presence of the one true teacher, with a capital T, who is here among us and who speaks to and through each one of us. We also affirm that as we listen in and go within, tuning in to the Holy Spirit, that what we hear here in this next hour is what we were meant to hear. So let's just sit in the awareness of His presence, opening our minds. Talk to us and through us. Let us hear. Amen. All right, so we're doing the psychotherapy pamphlet 2.6, the definition of healing, and Tom had put a link so you guys can read along with us, but we're going to take turns. I'm going to read a little share. Tom's going to share on what I read and said, and then he's going to read a little share, and then I'm going to comment on what he read and said, and then we're going to open it up, so if you feel guided to take the microphone, or you want to talk about anything that we read or speak on, please do. If not, you just want to sit back and listen, that's cool too. So 2.6, the definition of healing. The process of psychotherapy, then, can be defined simply as forgiveness, for no healing can be anything else. The unforgiving are sick, believing they are unforgiven. The hanging on to guilt, it's hugging close and sheltering, it's loving protection and alert defense. All this is but the grim refusal to forgive. God may not enter here, the sick repeat, over and over, while they mourn their loss and yet rejoice in it. Healing occurs as a patient begins to hear the dirge he sings and questions its validity. Until he hears it, he cannot understand that it is he who sings it to himself. Until he hears it, he cannot understand that it is he who sings it to himself. To hear it is the first step in recovery. To question it must then become his choice. And I want to comment a little bit. Have you ever seen someone talk about their illness or their seeming condition or their situation, and even though it sounds like they're upset about what it is that they're dealing with or seem to be dealing with in form, in the world, or with their body, that they have a sense of joy in their face, like their face and their eyes and their voice is betraying what they think they feel about the situation. It's an interesting thing that when we think we're sick or we think something's wrong, that we will rehearse it, we will restate it, we will talk about it over and over again, not really for any real desire to change it, because there's an attraction, there's a lure, there's an appeal that it also seems to serve. It seems to serve us. We identify with it. We love it. We love the drama. We love the story. And I myself have caught myself doing this. It's interesting how we affirm this. When I was taking yoga and I was in a yoga class, I wanted to make sure that I didn't pull my neck. And so I would constantly be rehearsing, I got to watch out for my neck, I got to watch out for my neck. And I was aware that I was doing it because I also knew that the instructor could come up to me and said, how come you're not doing the pose? And I was prepared in that moment to defend my illness and say, because my neck, you see, motorcycle accident, blah, blah. And it was made aware to me in that moment, the dirge I was singing. It was made aware to me, kind of like out of self-experience. I was able to see, wow, look at the tune I'm singing. Look at what I'm focused on. Look at what I hold so dear. So this is what this paragraph says to me. When we get to a point where we realize what we've been telling ourselves, what we've been believing, what we've been running on, and what we've been celebrating, even though it doesn't even feel like a celebration, we have been finding that while we're mourning, we're also rejoicing that we've identified. When we start looking at that, it's like we stop. We stop. We bottom from it. We just say, you know, wait a minute here. I don't want to be on the pity pot. I don't want to be all about the story. I'm getting sick and tired of hearing myself speak about this. I want the truth. I want to know. And it's not to say don't talk. It's not to say don't talk. It's just to say, what am I affirming for myself? Am I talking for the purpose of healing? Or am I wanting pity? Or am I wanting someone to do something for me? Or am I wanting to get out of having to do something myself? What does this serve? Do I want to play the victim that somebody hurt me and that's why I have this seeming situation or illness? What does this serve? Why do I hold it so dear? Am I really ready to give it up and know what the truth is instead? So it goes on and it says, there is a tendency, and it is very strong, to hear the song of death only an instant and then dismiss it uncorrected. These fleeting awarenesses represent the many opportunities given us literally to change our tune. The sound of healing can be heard instead, but first, the willingness to question the truth of the song of condemnation must arise. The strange distortions woven inextricably into the self-concept, itself but a pseudo-creation, make this ugly sound seem truly beautiful. The rhythm of the universe, the herald angel's song, all these and more are heard instead of loud discordant shrieks. There is a tendency to say, well, it's just a story, it's just the past, it's just the body, it's not real, it doesn't matter anyway. I don't really want to feel this way, so I'm just not going to look at it, I'm not going to tell myself this story, and I'm certainly not going to talk about it because I don't want anybody to feel sorry for me or to even know that I think this in the first place, and I might have this illness, but I'll hide it too. There is a tendency to hear the song of death, to hear the story, to hear it, and then to dismiss it uncorrected. Uncorrected. And all these times when this song came up, all these times were just opportunities for healing. As it says, these fleeting awarenesses represent the many opportunities given us literally to change our tune. It keeps coming up. It keeps appearing. Because it needs to be corrected. So the ear translates, it does not hear, The eye reproduces, it does not see. Their task is to make agreeable whatever is called on, however disagreeable it may be. They answer the decisions of the mind, reproducing its desires and translating them into acceptable and pleasant forms. Sometimes the thought behind the form breaks through, but only very briefly, and the mind grows fearful and begins to doubt its sanity. Yet it will not permit its slaves to change the forms they look upon, the sounds they hear. These are its quote-unquote remedies, its safeguards from insanity. And this whole paragraph is the nature of projection. It's the nature of projection. I had an aha about this. I was talking to a really close friend who is going through some relationship shifts, and one relationship in form seems to have ended. And so, in talking to him, I realized that we look at our relationships and the form that they seem to take, and we say, oh, what's wrong with me, or what's wrong with them? You know, why won't they try for a holy relationship? Or why did they leave me? Or why? Or why did I get this happening? Why is it in my movie? What's wrong with me? And we do the same thing with the body. We look at the body and we say, why does it have this illness? And what thought is driving it? And the interesting thing about it is that we focus so much on form that we miss that our judgment of it being wrong, our judgment of it being bad, keeps us focusing on form, the relationship, the situation, the body, the illness, whatever. It keeps us focused on effect, thinking that it's wrong, judging ourselves for it. And the aha that I had was, everything is for my healing. Everything. When a relationship seems to change, and I feel that someone, quote-unquote, abandoned me, nothing really happened. So this change in this relationship was necessary to bring up that belief in abandonment, to heal. And while I'm looking at the relationship and saying something needs to be different than it is, no way, I did something wrong, I thought something wrong, I understand projection, outside condition, inner condition, I get it. So how am I going to change this outside condition? And around we go. Around and around we go. But everything that's happening is happening for me so that I can heal. And it's going to do exactly what it needs to do. And my story about it needing to be other than it is just adds to it. Just makes me suffer that much more. So when it says the ear translates, it doesn't hear, it's because this is what we're looking to hear. When we're listening, we're focused on what we think is wrong and what we think something should be like. And the eye reproduces, it does not see. We're looking for proof of what we already believe. Their task is to make agreeable whatever is called on, however disagreeable it may be. We want everything that we see and hear to co-sign what we believe. We want it to affirm it. Even if we don't like what we think we see, the world needs to change, right? For us to be okay? Why are we asked to change our mind about the world? Because the world we see isn't really what's happening. Their task is to make agreeable whatever is called on, however disagreeable it may be. They answer the decisions of the mind, reproducing its desires and translating them into acceptable and pleasant forms. And sometimes that thought behind the form breaks through. We want so badly to keep things seeming the way that they are. So I feel the prompt to stop there. I'm going to open it up to Tom, and he could share about those three paragraphs, and then he can move on. We have only 7 paragraphs in this section, so you can finish it, and then I'll comment on what you end up reading to Tom, and then we'll open it up to anybody who wants to share.
All right, thank you. Well, As this whole pamphlet is so freaking simple and self-explanatory, I just want to kind of, reiterate a couple of things. He starts off by talking about how the only healing is forgiveness, because the only thing that can make someone sick is guilt. Okay? And it doesn't matter what form that the sickness or the suffering or the conflict takes, it is rooted in guilt. It's rooted in the idea of I've done something wrong, I've done something against God, therefore I deserve whatever I get. Okay. So the process of psychotherapy is questioning these beliefs, questioning these convictions and conclusions that our mind has drawn that has made us sick. It's as simple as that. It's questioning and being willing to question. And like Lisa touched on this, wanting to defend our suffering and our sickness. And it's amazing how this happens. I've had experiences of talking to people and them expressing, what's wrong, what they think is wrong, or what's bothering them. And as soon as one would say, okay, why not? Would you be open to seeing this differently? Okay? In such a way where it can actually literally disappear. And what happens more often than not is there's a defense that happens. No, I'm not responsible for this. No, this was caused by something else. No, this was done to me, etc., etc. The sick defend their sickness. And we defend our sickness and our suffering by seeing its cause somewhere else. Because if we were to turn around and say, I'm gonna go look where the cause really is, inside of my mind, inside of my perception of myself and of the world, then when that happens, it can no longer survive. Okay? You're gonna get, you might get the runaround from the ego, you might still hide it from yourself a little bit, but as soon as the direction is pointed inward, it's done. As long as the willingness remains there to heal, it is done. So, what else does he talk about? I don't know. I'll just carry on reading then. There's nothing really else I want to say. So this is paragraph 4. These testimonies which the senses bring have but one purpose: to justify attack and thus keep unforgiveness unrecognized for what it is. Seen undisguised, it is intolerable. Without protection, it could not endure. Here is all sickness cherished, but without the recognition that this is so. For when an unforgiveness is not recognized, the form it takes seems to be something else, and now it is the something else that seems to terrify. But it is not the something else that can be healed. It is not sick and needs no remedy. To concentrate your healing efforts here is but futility. Who can cure what cannot be sick and make it well? Sickness takes many forms, and so does unforgiveness. The forms of one but reproduce the forms of the other, for they are the same illusion. So closely is one translated into the other that a careful study of the form a sickness takes will point quite clearly to the form of unforgiveness that it represents. Wow. Okay. Yet seeing this will not effect a cure. This is achieved by only one recognition, that only forgiveness heals an unforgiveness, and only an unforgiveness can possibly give rise to sickness of any kind. Wow! So what he just said is that the forms our sickness seems to take in this world is directly connectable, if I can use that word, to the form of unforgiveness in which a mind believes. Okay. Many people have done, one person that comes to mind is Louise Hay. She's done a lot of work on the connection of certain illnesses and certain ailments with certain thoughts. I don't know much about this stuff, but I know from my own experience that this actually happens to be true. Okay. Wow, that's amazing. I never really even read that before. So what he's again saying, okay, is only unforgiveness can make you sick, and therefore only forgiveness can heal. And as soon as we become willing to look inward to where the unforgiveness is and use forgiveness on it, we are healed. And it's as simple as that. But the ego, make no mistake about this, okay? The ego will kick your ass before this happens, or at least attempt to kick your ass. If not kick your ass, it'll give you the runaround, and we all kind of fall for the runaround before we actually get to the forgiveness. And that's okay. It's okay that that happens. As long as we have the willingness to keep on questioning our beliefs, to keep on being willing and becoming more willing to forgive our own misperceptions, to that degree we will be successful in healing. I'll carry on reading. Wow. This realization is the final goal of psychotherapy. Notice he says final goal. Because when this realization dawns, healing has occurred. So who needs psychotherapy after their mind has been healed? This realization is the final goal of psychotherapy. How is it reached? The therapist sees in the patient all that he has not forgiven in himself, and is thus given another chance to look at it, open it to re-evaluation, and forgive it. When this occurs, he sees his sins as gone into a past that is no longer here. Until he does this, he must think of evil as besetting him here and now. The patient is his screen for the projection of his sins, enabling him to let them go. Let him retain one spot of sin in what he looks upon, and his release is partial and will not be sure. No one is healed alone. This is the joyous song salvation sings to all who hear its voice. This statement cannot be too often remembered by all who see themselves as therapists. Their patients can but be seen as the bringers of forgiveness, for it is they who come to demonstrate their sinlessness to eyes that still believe that sin is there to look upon. Yet will the proof of sinlessness, seen in the patient and accepted in the therapist, offer the mind of both a covenant in which they meet and join and are as one. Wow. So, again, again, the therapist and the patient heal together. The therapist sees what is still unforgiven in him. He sees this in the patient and has the opportunity to forgive himself for what he sees. But the therapist must understand that what he sees as being the reality of sickness in his patient is but his own unhealed mind. And the patient, through this relationship with the therapist, can experience that their sins and mistakes have been forgiven, giving proof that the sins and mistakes he keeps in his mind do not have to be there. He does not have to believe in them. And he knows this because the therapist has demonstrated that he does not believe in them. But the therapist can only do that after he has forgiven himself. So it is literally a perfect circle of healing that happens. It's incredible. It really, trust me people, it really works this way. There is no other way that it could work. A therapist that thinks the patient's sickness is reality is sick himself, and therefore he cannot heal. But if the therapist looks within himself and sees the illusion which he shares with the patient and applies forgiveness to it, forgives it, sees that it is not true, he will see the patient as healed and whole. And then he may, without projecting, help the patient and ask the patient to question his beliefs. And so they are healed together. And that's a beautiful thing. And believe you me, I don't know how else to say this. This is how it works, and there is no other way that it could work. This is the beauty of relationships in this world. This is the opportunity we have when we meet our brothers. It's just amazing. This pamphlet is amazing. Wow. Alright, well, I'm done. I'm going to drop the mic and let Lisa share on this. Thank you.